Coming up on this episode of the CreeperCast, for our triumphant return from the break, we get inside Satan with the people that made The Devil Within, Rise of Evil. Hear the stories from the set and why it was re-released on VOD. So head to the fridge and get yourself a hot bowl of Soylent Green, because it's time for CreeperCast, episode 113.
Hey guys, this is Bill Oberst Jr., the creepy guy, the creepy torso guy, on the CreeperCast. You're listening to CreeperCast right now with Jason and Jeff. There's no place else that you need to be. Do you hear me? Good. Don't make me go creepy on your ass.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the CreeperCast, the number one horror podcast comprised entirely of baby tears. It's like sweet, sweet, life-giving drug to us. I'm Jason, and you know Jeff. He spent the last month with his mouth sewn shut simply because he couldn't remember the safe word.
Wow. That was a good one.
To think I had to wait a month and a half for one.
Mike's not with us tonight. He ended up going on an expedition to the Easter Islands with a box of Trix cereal in an effort to find a rabbit that was throwing colored eggs at his window this morning. We'll be checking back with him next time to see how it went.
I'm sure it went perfectly what he totally expected, although I think he totally missed the idea of Easter.
Well, I tried explaining to him that it's not the same Easter, but he didn't believe me. That's Mike for you.
Yes.
So don't forget to get a hold of us by giving us a call at 503-454-6941. Send us email at feedback@creepercast.com or leave us a voice message by going to creepercast.com and clicking on the little leave us a message pop-up where you can record straight from your computer or cell phone, iOS, or Android device.
And we can use it right here on the show.
And we can use it right here. All right. Now, if you guys remember way back into January, all them weeks ago, we debuted our first independent feature episode of the movie The Devil Within, Rise of Evil. And we promised you that we would have guests from the film on the show. And today, we do have three guests. One will be coming in later, but I'm going to introduce her anyway. First up, it's writer, producer, Matt Dean. Matt created numerous films and television shows besides The Devil Within, Rise of Evil, including Blood Trail, Into the Cold, and Men in a Box. You can learn more about him by going to his website, mattdeanfilms.com. If great filmmaking was an Olympic sport, they would ban him for life and test everyone else for traces of Matt Dean.
Oh, that's a good one.
Nice, guys. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Next up, she'll be joining us later on, but I'm going to give her intro right now, and it would be the beautiful and talented Elizabeth DiPrinzio. She's quickly becoming one of the latest screen queens in Hollywood. Her recent films include Scary or Die, King of the Avenue with Vin Rames and Simon Rex, and The Culling with Jeremy Sumpter, due out later this year. She's so hot, the NHL blocks her from watching games because her glance has the potential to melt ice. They now refer to it as the DiPrinzio effect.
That's a good one.
And finally, it's our good friend, Mr. Bill Oberst Jr. You heard his intro. Bill came onto the show last summer to talk about all of his work. So rather than giving a full history, you can just go back and listen to episode 88. I can tell you that if acting chops were chopsticks, I gently fondle him in the middle of a Chinese restaurant.
I love this podcast. Sweet God, I love this podcast.
Oh, I don't think you want to talk to us. I just want to sit back and listen to you guys yammer on.
No, pretty good. I think, Matt, the other podcasts are so boring compared to CreeperCast. I really love this podcast.
These guys are amazing.
Especially if so you who give writes Jason your material? Chance.
Yes. Generally, I write it about an hour before we go on.
Was it crazy. Now that wasn't the that was that the alternate one from last time around?
That actually, yes, I will tell you that one was Bill. The first time we had you on, of course, we didn't know you very well. I didn't know if you would appreciate the fondling reference, so that's why the whole acting chops. I'm like, should I go with the chopsticks? And at the very last minute, you know, I wussed out.
What the hell do you think I am, a prude? My God, look at my IMBD. What the hell, man? This is going up. This is going on Facebook pronto. Thank you. Glad to be here.
So I guess my first question then, you know, would have to be to Matt. You know, you guys, this was released in 2008. Or yes. 2010, I mean.
2010, yeah, we shot in 2008, yeah.
Yes. And you re-released it this past October, was it, in 2012?
Correct. Yeah.
Can you tell us about the re-release? You know, why you did it, and of course, what went into it?
Well, we had a bit of a disaster with our first distribution company. We'd asked for a digital release. It never happened. And then the company went bankrupt. And so we'd had a release, a brief release in Japan, and Blockbuster released it here in the States briefly. We had a pretty good run, and we had an enormous amount of illegal downloads when the DVD came out. We had somewhere between 3 to 6 million downloads worldwide. Hmm. So we saw that there was some interest in this thing, and when we went through the problems of the bankruptcy, we decided to take back control over the film, and we wanted to release it back into the public. We wanted people to be able to see it, and we decided the best way to do that was to see if there's something else we could do with the picture to spruce it up a bit, to make it a little more exciting. So we opened it back up, and in looking at the cut, we decided we wanted to really trim things down, kind of pay attention to some of the comments that we've gotten over the last year or so with the picture being out, and figure out how do we make this thing faster, tighter, more exciting, more interesting, make the story flow a little bit better. And so that's what we did. We spent about 6 months re-editing, recoloring, finding a new soundtrack. We redid the full soundtrack, both the tracks that are laying underneath the action, and then also all of the music that you hear in there with these great new bands. We found through Sean O'Donnell some wonderful bands that we're happy to promote here. These guys have some great sounds and really, really added to the picture. So we set all this up to try and do a release in October for Halloween, and we're able to get it out just in time to get up on Amazon and had it out on video on demand there. And now we have it in with Phoenix Group releasing for going back out worldwide again this spring.
On DVD?
They'll be working out whatever the deals are. It may go out on DVD. We're looking at foreign sales currently. They're talking to a number of different places to see if we can where we're going to be getting it into. I'm not going to be handling a DVD release just because there's a lot involved and the expenses and all of it. And there's so few people that are buying DVDs anymore.
Yeah,
we just didn't see a demand enough in that department. But Phoenix is going to look into that for us and see what they think's best.
Now, you touched on something that's interesting that not many people think about. But whenever you put something out actually on DVD, there is the high potential of piracy for
sure.
It. Which is something that is actually good when it comes to video on demand, because it's really hard to pirate video on demand.
It's more difficult to do it there. And plus, when you've got prices that are only a couple of bucks, I mean, when you're buying a right. DVD for 20 bucks, it's like, yeah, it's a bit much. But, you know, you can rent this thing for $3 or you can buy it for $6 right now. It's like you really mind spending that much on this picture.
Right, exactly. And that's, I think that's what I liked about it is that, you know, when it came to it, you know, like you said, rent it for $3 or, you know, spend another $3. It's not like it's renting it, going down to the store, having to rent it for, you know, $3-4. and then take it back the next day and hope that you took it back on time. You know, with renting, it's right. there and it's gone. Or like you said, for another few bucks, you know, I think we had a author on a few weeks ago, and you know, he said the same thing with books, is that, you know, putting it out on Kindle and in digital form is really the wave of the future, because it makes things so much easier, not just from the consumer standpoint, but also from the producer standpoint.
Yeah, it's just a lot easier. And we want to make it easy for the audience to be able to get a hold of the film. That's why we're trying to do a quick release worldwide. We want to do digital releases in all these other countries that had interest in the film originally. Japan liked it. Russia liked it. A lot of Europe. We had downloads from everywhere. So we're trying to get the new version out, back out to everybody. And that's one of the reasons we wanted to talk with you guys and start promoting the film again, just to let people know that it's there and go out and pick it up.
The only thing I wanted to say about or add into that, see, Jason actually sent me a message going, hey, ask a question. but I did want to add some stuff in that, because I was a musician for many years, and I know that was one of our many problems, is it was both a blessing and a curse. You know, the internet especially was becoming the huge place where you get all this stuff at the time. Right. And as a musician, it was both a blessing and a curse. And like we've also discovered right here on the podcast, is that we honestly don't know how many people listen to us, although we do know we're on torrents.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing is, we look at I cover our downloads, you know, I watch all of that, and then come to find out that somebody is taking our MP3s, which we give out for free. That's fine. You take our MP3s, right. And they're putting it on torrents, which is great. I love that more people are listening to us, but I'd like to know how many.
Yeah, that's. I mean, for the podcast and stuff like that, all we really want to know is how many people are listening. But outside of that, to go back to the music thing, is that as a musician, I saw it as both a blessing and a curse, because I was also our promotions guy. And, you know, as the front man of the band, I put myself way out there. Yeah, I was the major slut of the group. And so I wanted just to know that thousands of people were listening. But then when you look in terms of the, you know, $2 or $3 is all you needed. Like when you were setting us up with the films in order to watch the movie, I was just like, well, I already bought it. So,
sorry about that. I've got Elizabeth on the phone, and she's awesome. Trying to connect to you guys.
Okay.
Lizzie, you're on?
I'm on.
Hey,
All right.
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter. Thank you for joining us. This is so awesome.
Yeah. Although we're the only ones who know that we have a gorgeous woman on the show.
And we're not talking about me. We're talking about Matt Dean, right?
Right.
Well, sometimes we're talking about Bill. It depends on if Jason's talking.
Oh.
Yes. You know, like I said earlier in the thing, if I would fondle him in the middle of a Chinese restaurant.
Who wouldn't?
Oh, I love this interview. This is awesome.
Turned out great.
Have you guys seen Bill's new pictures with his new prosthetic that he's got for this new picture he's working on? Holy cow.
Yeah, I was going to say, Bill, you have a creepy torso to begin with. That just like extension, you know, makes it that much better.
I played a pigeon-chested, club-footed, asthmatic serial rapist killer. They gave him everything but a speech impediment.
And at the end, he ends up walking off normal, like in The Usual Suspects.
Yeah, he turns into Kevin Spacey.
I kept forgetting to do the club foot. I had so many infirmities that I couldn't remember them all in every scene.
Oh, wow.
So, Elizabeth, we were talking about the film and the re-release, and so I just wanted to get your take on seeing a re-release of something that you made years ago and seeing it come back to life.
Yeah, well, I mean, Matt Dean's amazing, and the last version that I saw, he really cleaned it up, fixed the music, fixed a couple scenes, so I'm really impressed with the new version.
And Matt, I wanted to ask you, because this is something that really popped out if you listen to our review of it.
Yeah.
Being that, you know, I'm really big into editing and coloring, is the amount of color correction that you actually did.
Yes.
I mean, that had to take, did you do that all yourself, or did you hire that out?
Yes, I did everything here. I've got a little kind of boutique post facility for editing, color correction, special effects, all that stuff. So yeah, we did all the color work here at Matt Dean Films.
That is, I have to give you so many props on that because, you know, we were able to get a hold of the original, and there is just the coloring alone. There's a stark contrast in the coloring, the way that you did it, to me, really added to the mood of the film.
Thank you. Thank you. It's we wanted to do this thing right. If we were going to re-release it, we wanted to make sure the cut was right. We wanted to get the color right. We wanted to have the right music and just really feel like this was the best we could make with this picture. And so that's what we were hoping for. And I'm glad you guys like it.
Yeah, and one thing I wanted to add, you know, unfortunately, when you're doing such a small budget movie and your investors are pressing for release and pressing to sell it, sometimes you don't get as much time as the film needs to really put that time into the sound, into the coloring. And sometimes you end up, you know, not giving the greatest film that you could. And that's what Matt wasn't settling for. He went back and he fixed it and he did a great job. And I'm super proud of him.
Well, and it definitely shows. I mean, that, like I say, the look wise, they almost look like completely different films.
Two different films, yeah.
And so, I mean, you did a great job with that. And I think that's something that not many people realize, that when it comes to independent films, they're so used to seeing, you know, the big Hollywood films, that independent films, because you have a short budget, you're also talking a short time span for everything, short time span for shooting. Short time span for editing and coloring, post effects. So, and that's all stuff that adds to the mood and the feel of the film itself, that you take away one aspect. And I always go back to John Carpenter with Halloween. The first time he showed the film, he didn't have his signature music behind it, and nobody cared. They thought it was the worst film ever.
You know, it's really true. And these small productions, we don't have 3 months to shoot like the studios will take. We had 12 days on this film, and we had two additional days we took after the original filming to add in the scene with Bill in the hotel room with the hooker. So there was a lot of other things we added to it after the original shooting. And with 12 days, you get a one or two takes, three at most, with any of these people get a great performance, to get something that you can use and to try and get all your coverage. And it can be a real challenge.
Well, so I want to ask Elizabeth and Bill, you know, how is it shooting like that from your guys' standpoint as actors? I mean, I've always been behind the camera, being able to see it from that point of view. What's it like trying to act under that pressure?
For me, the thing about when I always come prepared to set, because I know, especially on the lower budget films, you don't get 3, 4, 5 takes. Sometimes I've done scenes and on some shots I've only gotten one take. So there's really no time to be giggling or chit chatting or messing around. You really have to be focused before the director calls action. You really have to have your thoughts in place and ready to scream or cry or run, be out of breath. So I always try and give myself some time before we shoot to really get there. But it is tough because, you know, I remember being in Puerto Rico filming King of the Avenue, and the sun was going down. And so the sun was going down and I had a helicopter above me. And we were trying to get this shot, and it was the climax of the film. And the director was like, all right, 1, 2, 3, start crying. We're going to roll. Sound, action. And I'm like, Jesus. And so you only get, you know, a couple seconds and a couple, you know, times to really get there. And that's just sort of the way it goes. You really have to be prepared. You don't get much time. And those are kind of the restrictions of low budget indie filmmaking. But if you're a good actor, you can get there quickly, get the shot and get out.
Bill, what's your take on this? I mean, you've done 1,001 films in 2012 alone.
This was the first movie that I did in L.A., so I was motivated mostly by fear. I only had 3 credits. You know, I'd been a stage actor 14 years on the East Coast and in New York, and when I switched to film, it was pretty terrifying, and this was the first feature lead that I'd booked. So I've done 95 projects since then. I just did 100 projects on IMDb. But this was good training ground, because every film I've done has been like The Devil Within. You got to have your shit together. Excuse my language, but you do not have time to mess around. And I see actors, and they're not just young actors, who text, who talk, who are, you know, the this, the that, the craft services, the this. And then when they get into the take, they're not there, because we know if they're there because we're looking in their eyes. And Elizabeth is 1,000% right. You only have seconds. It's like if you and your wife have the kid out of the house and you have the opportunity to have a date night and you're both kind of in the mood, you know how tenuous that is. You know how that mood can be broken by any little thing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? So you had better be prepared and take advantage of that opportunity. And that's just what a take is. A lot of times I think of it as like, it's like making love. Here's your opportunity. You got it or not.
Yeah, because you don't want to mess it up.
You will not get another chance. You have to forget that helicopter's up above your head. She's so right. Mm-hmm. The business is about passion. If you don't have passion, don't be a film actor, because it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be comfortable. Nobody's going to hold your hand in the low-budget world. If you don't have passion, don't do it.
I was actually...
Sorry.
I didn't mean to
be so passionate.
I was actually just talking with somebody a few weeks ago as we were giving a presentation to high school actors and I guess up-and-coming filmmakers, we'll call them, that want to go to college and study filmmaking. And one thing that this actor that was here, and he's from Michigan, that he said is, you know, he's been acting for 15 years and is now just starting to make money solely from acting, that less than 1% actually make a living off of it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So if you're on set, you're in a business that has a 99% unemployment rate and you're working. So my motto is work and don't bitch. Be ready, just like Liz says.
I mean, I've been in the cold with blood and wet and in really short shirts and skirts. And so it is tough. So, you know, I meet a lot of young girls as well who are like, I really want to do this. How do I start? And really what you have to do is just take every job that you can get, because it's a learning experience. And whatever drama you go through that night, you're going to need it later on when you actually make it.
She's so right. This is why Liz is such a pro and why she works so much. I love her. And she's the first girl that I molested on film. So I have a special place in my heart.
Jeff, I was going to let you have the next question, but I got to jump in and say...
Oh, I'm going to forget everything I wanted to say.
Because Bill brought that up. I mean, I have to say, Bill, the awkward chemistry between you and Elizabeth, you know, you as the principal, Elizabeth as the student, was just... I found it so amazing in that that... It ended up coming across such a attacker-prey kind of feel, that even right from the first time that in the film that she gets sent to your office, and I got to hand some of this to Matt too, constantly having the upward shot of you the whole time to, and then a downward shot of Elizabeth. I mean, something like that between all three of you guys, or I guess I know I said Matt, but I guess it would be the director, shouldn't I, Matt?
Yeah, Tom, and also our DP both had a big hand in the look of that.
Yeah.
That was a quick shot. There wasn't a lot of time to do it, and Elizabeth carried that shot because she was the more experienced film actor. I didn't really know what I was doing, and I just took my cue off her, and she looked like she was absolutely repulsed and terrified. And I've seen that reaction from many, many women on film since then. But Liz was the first one, and I just fed off of it. It was great.
Well, I just want to say that I think you fed off of it very well, though, because I watched the film, or I watched the original, you know, the original cut again last night. And, dude, that's like the creepiest ever I've ever seen a person be. And Elizabeth, the way you, I mean, I thought you were kind of feeding off the creepiness that Bill was exuding to you, but
yeah,
to hear that it was going the opposite way, that's an interesting take.
Bill has just this ability to really allow you to go there. So it actually really wasn't much acting. You know, I had just met Bill, young 19-year-old girl. This is my real first movie as well. So, and you know, Bill's older than me. And so when we started and we were on set, some of it was actually pretty natural. It wasn't much acting because I didn't know Bill, and he just has this ability within his eyes to make you feel like he's completely undressed you and he's just about to dominate and eat you alive. So, that fear was totally natural.
Oh, that is the sweetest thing I've ever heard.
But that's what a good actor does. That, and that's what Bill is. He brings it within his eyes so that you can go there and you can feel that, because you don't want me acting scared. You want me to actually be scared. And that's what Bill brought out of me.
Beauty and the Beast. It's Beauty and the Beast.
It really was. And I think that was a good portion of this film was, you know, the principal, you know, going to the hooker, which was an amazing.
Yeah, the setup. I mean, the setup was great. I mean, you were basically practicing that, you know, Matt, first of all, while I have the opportunity, I want to congratulate you for doing a lot of the things that I've always wanted to be able to do. So to be able to write the film, produce the film, be involved in the editing to the, you know, to, and re-release a piece of work the way you wanted it to be re-released. And,
Very enjoyable to be able to do that. And you get so much out of being able to see something from the beginning to the end, from the inception of the idea on through to seeing it shot and seeing it cut. And you learn so much about what to do differently on your next picture that it's a fantastic process that I think if you're just doing one of those things, you don't get.
Yeah. Which is why I congratulate you and I envy you at the same time, because I haven't been able to get to the level where I could do even at least see my stuff being acted
Jeff's
out yet.
Jeff's always so self-loathing.
I'm envious of everybody, by the way.
Well, you know what? The number one thing, though, with any picture, and that is if you cast it right, you're going to have a really good shot of having something worthwhile to cut, because right. You can have a good story, but if you haven't cast it right, then you're screwed. So we were very, very fortunate in finding people, because we didn't have a budget to hire big, big actors. So we spent time looking at people and finding who is it that really fit. And we just loved our cast. We thought that Bill and Elizabeth and Gray and the rest of the crew were just phenomenal people. And they've all gone on to do a lot of really amazing things. So we're very, very fortunate.
Yeah, you guys did cast really well. Everyone from The Devil Within has gone out and has either been on a show or did another movie. You guys did a really good job with the cast. I was impressed and happy to work with everyone on that shoot. And I can't say that for every film that I've done.
The guy who played the older brother, Trey Damon's older brother, is named Morgan Benoit, and he is now one of the biggest movie stars in China.
I love Morgan.
He's a martial arts action star.
That's, I know, awesome. He's amazing.
Wow. Yeah. He's got a couple new pictures coming out this year that's him as the lead, and it's going to be phenomenal. So you definitely want to keep watching for him.
Speaking of actors, I want to mention, because you mentioned the hotel scene, the encounter between Prince Bloodwoods and the hooker.
Yeah.
A lot of times the girls always carry these scenes, and I know because I've literally done hundreds of them. And a lot of, they're like, oh, you know, the guy was creepier, he was menacing or whatever, but it's always the girl. That's why I said Liz carried this scene. In that scene, the hooker was played by Rayon Plessant, and she also knew stunts. And I didn't know anything at all about film stunts. And so she choreographed this whole little dance we had to do where I end up, you know, giving her a little kiss with an iron.
Yes.
and we worked it out. She said, do you feel comfortable? And then when we got to filming it, everything flipped, and then she was the vulnerable one, and I was, you know, but I was actually going through action she had choreographed. And very, very frequently it's that way with the girls in the scenes. If you're terrorizing a girl in the scene, you want to put her in the best light. So you're like, what's your best side? You know, how can I help you with your hair to make sure you get in the light? You want to grip her face in a certain way and make her look good while she's being terrified, because that's where the sex appeal comes in. But I would have had no idea had I not, you know, been doing this for a living now for 5 years, that it's almost always the women who are playing the victims who are really, really in charge.
So in that case, it's kind of like the whole S&M thing that, you know, the person that's the sub is actually the one in charge.
You seem to know a little too much about that. You use those. Next, you're going to throw the term ball gag around casually.
Well, you don't. Oh.
I didn't say that.
I'm surprised he hasn't brought it up already. But I mean, he was talking about me not being able to speak during an S&M session. So,
speaking of sex appeal, this film is a lot sexier now. It has like 43% more cleavage in it. And, you know, people scoff, but there are, to me, there are very few problems in this genre of film that cannot be fixed by some degree of female nudity.
You know, yeah, totally. During our review, I think I brought that up in our review, is I Good. Said, you know, the great thing is it wasn't a film that just, you know, jumped right out at you. Here's a set of boobs right here. But it was like the setup that when there finally was a topless shot, I was like on the edge of my seat going, come on, I've seen so much cleavage. I just got to see. And then finally it's like, there it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
Well, and then for the new version, I'm like, oh, we stayed on it for a little while longer. So you had it there, and it's like finally the payoff for that. Stay on it for a little while, and then we snap you right back out of it, and then we bring it back in. So we build up to it through the dance sequence and build that sexuality back up again.
Yeah.
Build up with the scene with Elizabeth and Gray.
You're like Hitchcock with nudity.
And that leads me to actually. It's the perfect opportunity for me to actually say that my girlfriend, who hadn't actually seen any of the film, you know, either version of the films yet at this time, but knew that I was talking to you guys this, you know, today, decided she had to at least watch the trailer that Matt had recently posted because of us, you know, talking tonight. And she watched it and she sends me a text going, so basically it's a porn with a horror twist. And I was
Love
like,
it.
I was like, you have to see this movie.
I was going to say, this no is idea. Far from that. I've seen a lot of horror films that are basically, you know, late night Skinamax.
Yeah,
right.
With stabbing. This is definitely not that. This is a great. To me, this is a great traditional style horror film with some nudity in there.
Some,
but not
very
much.
Little.
That's the thing.
That's the thing is that there's not very much nudity at all in it when it comes down to it. And of course, after seeing it, she had a much greater appreciation.
That's why I did it. You know, I've done a lot of horror films where there is nudity, and I told myself after I made one big mistake with one that I would never do one of those again. And so when I got cast in The Devil Within, the first thing I wanted to know was how much nudity and how much am I showing? And I had pasties throughout the entire film. So
sure did.
Yeah, sure. And I walked around with them too. So yeah, The Devil Within is totally so much more cleaner than the other films that are out there, and I think that's what makes it original and so much different than those lower budget. Let's get a bunch of naked girls and throw some blood on them because that's what they're going to sell. And so I think that's the chance that Matt and Randy and Cindy took with this film was to make a cleaner version for kids and teens and to add that horror element and thriller that, you know, that they like in that genre.
And for us, it wasn't about the nudity, though we knew that that was important to the genre. It was about sensuality, because sensuality does run throughout the picture, and it allows that ebb and flow throughout of it, the give and take of it. The stuff at the very beginning at the school with Gray and with Elizabeth Bell, that little bit that's in there, those little tastes of it, the little hints of it as
yes.
it goes along. And we build up to that immense sensuality of the dance scene. There's no nudity in the dance scene, but it's incredibly sensual. And so that to us was more of the point. And the slight nudity we have in there, we felt was important, but it was more to accent the whole sensuality of it and not just as a blatant, here's a bunch of boobs to bounce around the screen.
If people want to see the trailer that you're talking about, they can go to devilwithinfilm.com and the trailer's right there.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes.
They also have links there to the Amazon site for the downloads, plus the Facebook, and links to music. I know you guys were talking about some of the music stuff there. We've got a link to an iTunes collection we put together of all the music so that people can go on there and see who's in the film and the band.
That was actually my next thing to get to, is because I know Elizabeth actually contributed to the soundtrack.
Yeah,
which as a musician, I take great pride in seeing, you know, an actor actually being a musician as well.
One of my songs is in there. I'm super proud to have it in there.
And I don't know that I don't have hers on iTunes. Elizabeth, is your song on iTunes yet?
No, you know, when I had started my music, I was actually creating an EP and working with a producer, and that's when I had gotten that job in Puerto Rico with the King Avenue, and I sort of stopped, and from there I haven't really gone back to it. But Yeah, I mean, I've written a bunch of songs. I'm more of like a songwriter. I love putting lyrics to music, and I've contributed to some other films and friends who needed music. And so I just kind of keep it light. You know, that's sort of not my career path. I love to act, and that's what I'm sticking to. But I love to sing. I love playing the guitar. I love writing music. And it's just more of like a cool hobby. And if my friends who are also producers, directors need music, I throw my songs towards them and see what happens.
Now, if someone wants to hear a full version of your stuff that's in the film, where should they go?
My MySpace is still up. MySpace, who says that?
MySpace, what's that? It's coming back, actually.
I'm sure my music is still up on MySpace. They can go there and find it.
Okay.
Real quick,
all the other stuff, it's up on that iTunes. We've got that link on thedevilwithinfilm.com, and it goes straight through it. And you can buy any of the songs that are on there, from Day Above Ground, who is phenomenal, Feel Never Real, Samus Theory. Those guys are the ones that have that new kind of Linkin Park-ish sound, a lot of those things. And then we've got Crowned by Fire, which was on the original in the original film as well.
Yeah, I mean, the whole soundtrack,
was great.
I mean, it was great.
We were very, very fortunate. We got a couple of really great artists. Emmy, who does the song Magic, which is what is the song during the dance scene. Mm-hmm. She's great. She's done really, really well. Mike Foyle, who is big in the dance world in Europe, a song called Firefly that goes on during part of the film. But then the rest of the stuff, Samus Theory, Day Above Ground, those are all new ones that we found through a friend of mine who's a music manager, and it was a couple of bands that she was managing, and said, I said, look, I'm looking for some bands. I need some new stuff to put into this. She said, look, these guys are wanting to get promoted. They've got some great music. See if any of it works. And so much of it just fit in absolutely perfectly. Especially, I'm really excited about the opening song from Samus Theory, Signs, and then the end of the film, Grinder from Day Above Ground, which fits just brilliantly as the credits are going up. I'm just really excited about all of it.
All right.
And while we're talking about actors, though, I wanted to, you know, point or get into the Alex Aldridge and Peyton.
Oh yeah,
connection.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm more curious from the standpoint of was the character of Rachel originally part of the script, or was that something you worked in later?
Yes,
because she seems to be very integral.
It's actually the one point that we had for the beginning of the script. When we started this, it was supposed to be a part two to a film that Randy and Cindy did called Disturbed. Mm. Very ultra low budget, even more so than Devil Within was. And Randy said, I want to do part two to this film. It'd be kind of fun. And we looked at the idea, but it just didn't feel like it was going to work terribly well. So when we sat down to go over the story ideas, I said, Randy, what's the one thing you really want in this film? And he said, I want my kids. And that's mm-hmm. Alex and that's Peyton. So we sat down to look at who they are and what kind of story could come around that. Well, Peyton is handicapped. She has AMC, which arthrogryposis multiplex congeality. Anyway, I can't speak. It's a huge, huge term.
You should hear Jason try to say names.
Yeah, I can't say names anyway, so.
Well, the website for it is amcsupport.org, and that tells you more about what it is that she has. And that, as being a big part of her, we wanted to make it part of the picture. She likes to act, and I thought, okay, how do we take this and make this into a storyline? And the idea was, I have never seen in any horror film, at the end of the picture, a handicapped girl getting run down by our villain.
Yeah.
So that's where we started the entire idea. We got a handicapped girl running in a back alley, trying to run, scared out of her wits, getting chased down by someone with a knife. So we started there and worked our way backwards. Who is this girl? Why is she there? How did she get there? And then that's how the story developed. So that was very integral to the very beginning of the idea of the picture.
Okay. Well, real quick, hold on, Jeff. Real quick, I want to say goodbye to Bill. He has to take off. Hey, thank you for joining us, man. It was great having
you
on.
Thanks, Bill.
Well, talk about being kicked to the curb.
Well, you sent me a Oh, wait, that was Elizabeth that sent that. I'm sorry. I thought that was you, Bill. Elizabeth, thank you for joining us. I'm sorry to see you go so soon.
No worries. It's just Easter. My mom is visiting, and she's right. about to run out the door, and I got to say goodbye to her.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for joining us.
Bye, guys. Bill, you're the best. Matt, you're the greatest man on earth. Bye, guys. XOXO.
Okay.
Sorry, Bill.
Down to the testosterone.
Actually, in 5 minutes, I got to leave for a family thing anyway, too. I guess everybody's got something going on because we're taping on Easter.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the, and I really apologize for that. I actually did not think of it 2 months ago when I set this up.
I want to mention on the one thing that Matt did, he tightened this film up, and it is amazing. I'm consistently and constantly amazed at how much difference editing can make in a film. I mean, it seems it would be self-evident. You're like, oh, okay, I know. But when you watch these two films side by side, they're really not the same film.
They are very, very different, and that's one thing. We were hoping we were going to get a different title on IMDb because we got so many bad ratings there that we would have liked to have been able to separate the two a little bit more because it really is a very, very different picture than people saw the first round.
Yeah, it's tight. It moves. The music is constantly underneath. It's like an almost constant soundtrack. So I went to see
it
at Matt's
house.
The music
works great with it.
The big screen. the music just drives it. It's really a much, much better film.
Right. Bill, before you go, I want to read something that actor Justin Reno sent.
I was going to say, speaking of actors.
He actually emailed us, I believe it was it yesterday or the day before, Jeff?
It would have been a couple days ago. I've been talking to him for the last 3 days, you know, since he did that email.
Okay.
And he's a really fun guy. And
yeah. He said, hello, this is Justin Reno, actor from The Devil Within. I just wanted to stop in and say thanks for the great review of the film. Matt, Tom, and company put a lot of effort and care into the film, and it shows. It's always nice to hear people enjoying a fun, independent horror film. I watched the new edited version and very much enjoyed the new cut. Everything does flow, like you said. The soundtrack kills. It's rare to hear such a great soundtrack in an independent film. You don't always get that. Elizabeth, both Elizabeths for that matter, Gray, Bill, Alex were amazing to work with. It was so awesome working with Alex. We worked together before on the film Disturbed, and he has come a long way acting-wise. We are still good friends, as well as Elizabeth D. and Bill. I talked with them frequently as well. Even Mr. Fred Barry Jr. So again, the podcast was great, and thank you guys for a wonderful review. Thanks again. Take care. So I want to thank Justin for that. That was awesome to hear from him.
Definitely, Justin. Yeah, man.
He will be joining us eventually. Like I said, I've been talking to him for the last couple of days, and I think he needs to come on the show and try to go through the frickin' frack thing. I want to hear him try to repeat that.
He was really – I think he's a natural. He's really hilarious in that. I want to echo what Justin said about working with Peyton Aldridge. Sweet, but also very talented. She really knows what she's doing, and I think sometimes that we are very guilty of – you know, when someone is differently abled of deciding what they can and cannot do and what career paths may or may not be open to them. And it's wrong because there's no reason that we should not have within the world of actors, people of all types of ability, you know, people who can see, people who can't see, people who have difficulty moving, people who are mobile. I mean, look at me. I'm ugly as sin, but I work. So, I mean, I'm in a little bit of a minority there too. So it was great working with Peyton. And I think she's a really good actress. I'd like to work with her again.
She's very professional.
I thought she was amazing. Yeah. That's why I brought her up. And the fact that the storyline seemed to work entirely around her, especially in the recut, because when you were talking about the handicapped person running away, with the recut, you actually put that at the beginning. So we had the end at the beginning, and then we basically had flashbacks to get us there, and which was great. And I thought that was amazing. And I kept the whole time. I mean, first of all, I was being really stupid because I didn't realize that Alex and Peyton were related till I actually looked at their names because I kept going, is he really your brother? Cause they look like they should be.
I think we talked about that in the review.
Yeah. But, and I think none of us looked to actually see if they had the same last name or anything, but But no, I thought she was amazing, and that's the reason why I had to bring it up is you don't. It's one of those areas of horror, like, and we constantly talk about this on the show, that one of the things that the only way now you can make a horror movie that's going to make a splash is to actually break those barriers that you're not supposed to go to.
That's right.
And that was one of those opportunities that you guys took that I thought worked amazingly, especially with the storyline.
We're really proud of that fact. And it was a big area that Randy and Cindy both really, really wanted as part of it. And we wanted to make it an integral part without highlighting it as something special or different. Otherwise, we just wanted to be as her character. That's just who she is. Yeah. That's where we were. That's what we wanted for the character. So we didn't want the other actors pointing it out. We want the other characters pointing it out as being anything different. It was just as if there was nothing different or wrong or whatever about it. It was just the way it was.
Very well handled.
We felt that was really, really important to it.
And ultimately, it
came across as her brother caring for her, but not treating her particularly fragile. Like, this is my sister.
Yeah.
I love her.
Like, she's different.
And, that she's different, and this is how I take care of her. I thought it was really natural. It's great to see. I certainly hadn't seen that in a horror movie.
But ultimately, I have to ask, when is the sequel coming?
Yeah, Matt.
You know, I would love to, and we'll have to see how this can do. We've had good audience response to a certain degree. I think the biggest challenge has been with so many problems of the original release and so much loss of funds through theft, through an enormous number of downloads again that were worldwide that we missed out on, partly because of the distribution company. That hopefully we can make some of that back on this current pass, so we can try and make another one. And that, what I would say, is the biggest issue with independent films. It's tragically difficult to recoup, especially in a marketplace that feels like they don't want to pay for anything. It makes it hard. It may not be as big a deal to some of the studios, but certainly with the independent filmmakers, this is how we make part two. This is how we make part three. And if people want to see them, we can't do it. We can't keep shelling out $500,000 to something that doesn't make it back.
Hey, so guys, I'm going to head to this dinner.
All right.
But I want to encourage you, because Matt would probably never mention this, ask him about the book that he's writing on this very subject. With that, I will say that I really, really love CreeperCast. I think you guys are one of the most professional podcasts out there.
Well, thank you.
That means a lot.
All right, dudes.
You have a good night.
God bless you. Bye.
And I want to take the opportunity to step on a soapbox and tell our cast members that you watch this movie. I mean, go to Amazon.com. Look up The Devil Within, Rise of Evil. Pay the $3 for the rental, the $6 to purchase it. You're going to want to purchase it, because I've seen it four times, and I'm not quite sure I've seen enough of it yet. And after you're done with it, you're going to want to see a sequel, because this movie totally is set up for a sequel. And just keep in mind that the more people that you convince how good this film is, the more people who are going to put into it that may make the sequel happen, just like Matt was talking about.
Right. We'll put a link to the Amazon download in the show notes. So, go to creepercast.com/113. In the show notes there, we'll have a link directly to the Amazon page where you can download it. But don't forget, don't ever just go straight to Amazon. Go to creepercast.com/Amazon and search for it. Not only will you be helping Matt out, but we also get a percentage from Amazon for it also. So you'll also be helping out the Creepercast.
Well, that's fantastic. I didn't know that.
So, yeah.
So if we point people in the direction of CreeperCast and they're able to go through there, then that helps you guys out as well.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Wonderful. Okay.
Everything is circular here.
Yes.
Now about the book that Bill was talking about.
I've worked on quite a number of pictures the last number of years and learned a lot from that. And I've partnered up with an amazing producer by the name of Julia Verdon, who did Merchant of Venice with Al Pacino, Standard with Tom Jane. She did one of the Stephen King movies. We saw a great need for independent producers, and we were getting asked a lot of questions by people who wanted to become producers on what it means, how you do it, how do you do these films. And so we decided to write a book about that process. And so we've got a book that we're just finishing now and should be coming out in June on producing independent feature films. So we wanted to meet those needs where they are, because we can't meet one-on-one with everybody. We're also doing consultation service for people who want to learn how to do films. But there just hasn't been anything else out there like that. There are a million books on how to direct, a million books on how to write, but really nothing on what is the process? How do you find a good story? And what is a good story when you do find one? How do you know? How do you cast? How do you find funding? How do you do distribution? What's production like? How do you deal with these things that are going to come up?
Well, and I think that's a great resource to have, because I'm already a writer.
So
yeah, I have a lot of books as far as, you know, directing and cinematography and all that. But, you know, the one thing that is hard for anybody, unless you specifically spend, you know, years going through, you know, film school in Southern California or something, it's hard to know the entire business of not just filmmaking for big studio, but independent filmmaking. Because, you know, it's not like, you know, you can go out with, you know, as great as cameras are now, you know, I have a beautiful camera that shoots, you know, 35 millimeter on drive, you know, but, you know, 35 millimeter lens, all that stuff. So it takes great video quality, but that's only a small percentage of filmmaking, even if you're a director.
It is. And what, as we saw so many needs for so many different areas, distribution questions people had, how do you get it out there? How do you have a film that the distribution company is going to want? You're spending a lot of money and a lot of time on putting together an independent film. So you want to do it right from the beginning. And what does that mean? How do you find out what those right things are and what's going to sell? And although there's no guarantee, no matter what you do with it, as you see from many of the studio pictures that get done for $100 million and make nothing back, there are certainly a number of things that can be done to help you have a much better chance of finding success. And that's like, we're actually going to be putting together a series. It's called Success in Films. And that's what the book is going to be, the first part of that series.
Oh, that is great. I love that idea.
You were talking about it sometime around June release?
Yes. Yeah, we're just finishing up with the book now. We're going to be getting it out. We'll be doing probably self-publishing to begin with, just because we want to get it out. It takes a good 8 months or so when you're with the larger publishers to get out through them. Right. So we'll probably be releasing in June and maybe going through a larger publisher after that.
So I know that we've talked about the fact that there are other projects that you have in the works, and with this, you know, book added to the list, and the fact that I still would like to get Justin on to talk, we definitely have to get together sometime. I'm guessing late June or early July.
Sure.
To have you back on the show.
Absolutely. Be glad to. Absolutely glad to. Yeah, you guys are great, and this is it's a lot of fun to talk, and you guys ask a lot of interesting questions and obviously have a real love for this genre and for filmmaking. It's nice to...
Yeah, like I warned you from the start, is that we're kind of all over the place, so if there's something you don't want to answer, just don't answer it. But you know, I mean, we pretty much feel that it's a lot easier for everybody if it's more free form and you know, we get to know each other rather than just be quizzing you on, you know, what made you who you are. And we've gotten a lot of long-lasting relationships out of the deal. So, I mean, that's something we can't complain about. I mean, Bill's been a great friend, and we're sure that you're going to be with us for a while now, too. So,
well, I appreciate it. And, yeah, Bill's amazing. Bill and I hike just about every week and talk about all these bizarre topics, and enjoyable to be around. So, and Lizzie joins us from time to time, too, so you all might catch us every once in a while, the three of us hiking up Griffith Park on a Saturday morning or during the week at times.
So remember, all you cast members, spend the weekend stalking them in California, stalking them at Griffith Park.
See, fortunately, they're only six or eight, I don't know, probably a lot more than that away from me, but...
I'm going to be jumping on a plane this weekend.
Yeah, come on out, guys. We'll show you around the town.
At some point, I do need to get out there because we've made so many friends from this podcast and, you know, out in L.A. that, you know, I got to make a trip out there sometime just to meet people face to face.
Absolutely.
Which would be a great plan for us someday, is to try to get a lot of these people together, especially after the next. I mean, I wanted to really quickly just point out there to all of our cast members that we have a lot of stuff coming up in the future. I know next month we are talking to Brad Potts who's done all, who's been in a lot of films with Bill. I mean, you're going to notice a thread eventually, but who's been in a lot of films with Bill. He's an actor who's done a lot of B-rated horror stuff, and he's an awesome guy. After that, we are going to be talking to the director of Scary or Die. If you haven't seen that film yet, what's wrong with you?
You know, another guy you might want to talk to, Matt Spradlin, who did Bad Kids Go to Hell, a good friend of mine from out of Texas. Great guys. Fun movie. It'd be a good group for you guys to talk to as well.
All right. Write that down, Jeff.
I am. They're
one of the top films in VOD right now. They've done a great job with this picture.
Yes, I've seen that many times. And if they're in Texas, they're a lot closer than me, than most people are, so I can actually stalk them. No, I'm just kidding, really.
We don't say meet up, we stalk.
Right.
That's how it works.
It's an affectionate term. Yeah, it's an affectionate term. It's not like, you know, Bill or Burr showing up at your house. No, which I think would be pretty cool, but.
Hey, have you guys purchased any of his ears?
Yeah, he sent me one. He sent us one signed to the Creeper Cast.
Excellent.
Yeah, he sent us one signed to the Creeper Cast. He actually, you know,
up there, you can buy one of Bill's ears.
Speaking of Bill's ears, I want to point out the fact that apparently Jared Leto was a little freaked out by receiving one of Bill's ears.
I love that.
Which I think is amazing. Oh, yeah, you know, there's rumors now that he might have set the whole thing up, but. But this, you know, Jared Leto is setting something up that involves Bill O'Burst Jr. That tells you just how amazing this man is.
Well, and he was just in a video with, what was the
Jim
one?
Jim Carrey.
Yeah, the Jim Carrey video. Yeah. Bill's everywhere. But where is he not? I think it'd be easier to say where he's not right now.
I know. It was so funny because, you know, being that I live in Northern Michigan, you know, I've got a lot of, the gun culture is really big around me. So I have a lot of friends that, you know, are, and myself included, that are big into firearms. And so they sent me this this video saying, you know, can you believe this? Watch this. And so I flip it on, and the first person that pops up is Bill. I'm like, oh, look, it's Bill. I didn't pay attention to what actually happened the rest of the thing or what Jim Carrey was actually singing about. I'm like, it's Bill. Look at him.
I had a general idea of what it was about. And, you know, I mean, Jason and I don't necessarily share the same views on, you know, political things. So it was, as soon as he sent it to me, I'm like, oh, great. and then I watched it. I'm like, wait, Bill. And then I'm like, Bill again. Oh, wait, Bill. And at that point, I didn't care about the message. It wasn't about the message. It was about Bill.
it was great. No. He's getting around. He's getting a lot of work. I mean, but you're on right now. So I want to ask you, you know, because we got to get going soon.
Sure. Yep.
You know, anything coming up with Matt Dean Films, you know. It's a great website for people to check out, mattdeanfilms.com. And you're doing, it looks like, you know, you've got feature films, web series, stuff like that going on there.
A lot of different projects. We shot a office comedy last summer that will hopefully be coming out this fall. Kind of a South Park version of Office Space.
That's a great pitch.
So that's, it's really funny, really awful language between a couple of office mates who hate each other and really hate working there and just destroy the place. And then we've got a wonderful Western called Blood Trail, which we're going to be finishing up this late spring, early summer. It's been shot in three different pieces. We originally shot a short film, and then we did a part two. And as we're doing part two, we decided we want to make it turn into a full feature. So we're shooting part three, and it's fantastic. Anthony DeLongis is the main star and director and put all the stunts together. One of the top stunt weapon experts in the world. He fought Jet Li in Fearless. He trained Harrison Ford. He's just done some amazing, amazing work. And so that film is going to be one to watch for, Blood Trail, which we'll be finishing shooting. And then hopefully, I think this fall to winter is when it should be out. So those are the two big ones now. We've got a bunch of other stuff in development. Matter of fact, working with Elizabeth on some new projects and Siren Studios, trying to put some things together with them. So hopefully we'll have something more to talk about in a month or so when we know more.
Oh, that's great. Keep us in the loop, and with that, any last things you want to say, Jeff, or ask before I close us out?
Not at this point. I think I pretty much said everything. I mean, like I mentioned earlier that we will definitely be talking June and July. That gives you plenty of time between now and then to talk about the things we've discussed, to get together those things, I hope. And then I do want to, like I said, I do want to bring Justin in because I think I want him to give the frickin' frack speech.
If you gotta possibly see if we get him and see if Alex get the two of them together, because that would be pretty funny.
That would be fantastic, actually. And and we've joked back and forth about Gray.
Oh, yeah.
About how hard it would be to get him these days, but
we'd have to see what we could do. Gray's very, very busy indeed.
But that's about all I got.
To Cindy and Randy for all their hard work and support and while putting this whole thing together, and to you guys for your love of the film and film in general. And your support of it. It's with you guys that makes this kind of stuff possible.
Oh, well, thank you.
All right.
We won't stop regardless. So.
Well, I'm going to take us out of here. Matt, if you want to just kind of hang on after we're done, and we can talk afterwards.
All right. Great. Thanks, right. Guys.
Well, I think it's time I hit the music right there. And that was our interview with Matt Dean, Bill Oberst Jr., and Elizabeth DiPrinzio. Don't forget to get a hold of us by giving us a call at 503-454-6941. Send us an email at feedback@creepercast.com. We are on Twitter at twitter.com/creepercast and on Facebook at facebook.com/creepercast. And don't forget to head over to creepercast.com/113. To get a link to download or to the Amazon to be able to watch The Devil Within, Rise of Evil. Once again, thank you, Matt, for joining us. It was awesome.
Thanks, guys.
All right. See ya.
Thank you for listening to my uncle's podcast.